Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Studio somewhere deep in the Sawtooth Mountains of Western Idaho comes LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I am looking at my business partner and good friend, Richard Polinelli. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Jim. How's it going tonight out there in Idaho land?
It is, as I told Sam, finer than frog's hair. And my constant companion and co-host for the last almost 7 years, Bobby Jean Bell. Howdy, Bobby.
Hi. I'm still looking at tonight's book on my phone because I'm trying to find a couple of key things.
Well, you may not want to dig too deep because they're all through the book.
Oh, my gosh.
Tonight is the kind of show that every talk show wants to have. We not only have Mr. Henry Park, the voice, but we also keep it in your pants, Henry. And we also have not only an actress, but I mean, she's a survivalist of New York. She has gone one-man shows. She has done everything from TV to movies to plays to writing books. And she'll be joining us a little bit later on. But right now, of course, it is the first Thursday of the month, and we have on our show Mr. Henry Park. Hello, Henry.
Hello, Jim, and greetings, Bobby, Jane, and Richard. Well, now, yesterday was the Netflix premiere of James Samuel's new Western, The Harder They Fall, which is also in theaters. Did anyone else catch it yet?
I watched half of it.
I really enjoyed it. Did you?
I did. They also have another one about the rancher in, Oklahoma. The Indian, the Choctaw Rancher. I forget the actual title of the movie, but it's really good.
Oh, good. I'll have to track that one down. I don't know about it. Well, about The Harder They Fall, I found the plot very interesting, if times convoluted. The performances were very fine. Excellent ensemble work led by director Samuels, who co-wrote it with Bose Yakin, and he also composed the very unusual, very effective score. It was shot in New Mexico, and Mihai Malemir, I hope that's close to right, photography is stunning. When it comes to shootouts, it has the best action of the year that I've seen, and the absolutely best knockdown, drag-out brawl between two women that I've ever seen. At 2 hours and 19 minutes, I think it's a little long. Scenes often either start too early or run too long. But director Samuels is an interesting guy. He's an African Englishman who grew up loving Westerns. And while an opening title makes it clear that it's fiction, Samuels was determined to include as characters lots of real black Westerners. And in a way, it's too much. He has so many characters that it's kind of hard to keep them straight.
Right.
And you learn nothing about the real people. He has rodeo star Bill Pickett and stagecoach Mary as outlaws.
Oh.
Which is kind of
wrong.
Right. Delroy Lindo is a standout as Bass Reeves. And while it's been discussed as an Idris Elba movie, and he's a strong role, it's still a supporting player. And Jonathan Myers as Nat Love is the star.
Right.
But I would highly recommend it. Now,
yeah, it's a fun watch. I'm going to finish it tomorrow morning. So,
yeah, it is fun. It's not deep, but it's good.
No.
Now, it's been a few weeks since the tragic shooting on the Rust set, where star and producer Alec Baldwin, rehearsing with a gun he thought was loaded with blanks,
right,
pulled the trigger and killed cinematographer Halney Hutchins and right, wounded director Joel Souza. It's very hard to figure out what's happened, especially when an uninformed press keeps referring to real guns as prop guns and using the terms blanks and dummy rounds interchangeably. All that to me seems clear is that either multiple people were being incredibly irresponsible with weapons and ammo on set, or it was outright sabotage. When it comes to using guns on camera, most genres switched a few years ago to CGI gun flashes that are added in the editing.
Right.
Westerns have been the last holdout among action genres because they use black powder, whose smoke and flash is so distinctive. Although director Michael Pfeiffer pointed out to me that in the trailer for his new Western, The Last Shootout, they used no blanks, just CGI flashes and smoke, which were very convincing. But I think it's important to point out that in the 118 years since Thomas Edison's great train robbery, Western films have had an excellent safety record when it comes to firearms. There have been a lot of serious injuries on Western films over the years and some deaths, but I don't know of a single shooting injury on a Western set before this.
Right, right.
Yeah, Henry, I got a quick question related to that. Will this one accident or incident or however you want to describe it, will it make a major change, or are you hearing from people that you talk to that they're going to make a major change in the way they shoot Westerns so that they completely eliminate the possibility of this happening again? Or are they just going to say, this was a one-off, somebody goofed, and we're going to continue the way we have?
Well, I've heard both. Generally, the people that are, I think, calling most vigorously for, no more real guns of any kind on sets are not people that are really involved with them, and just want it as a general policy. As the people that I've talked to, and I've talked to several armorer friends since this happened, the rules that they have for handling firearms have kept people safe on movie sets for more than a century. Yeah. And, you know, the fact that something terrible happened when the rules were not followed, that the rules are pretty good. You just need to keep enforcing them.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how it's going to go. I would hope that people could, go back to being careful and it wouldn't be a problem. But it's dangerous. And, once somebody gets killed in a situation like this. It's pretty grim stuff.
Totally grim stuff.
Yeah. Well, now, next Wednesday, November 10th, at 9 p.m., the documentary series Artbound returns to our PBS station, KCET, and it's shown on other PBS stations, with a very interesting and controversial episode, Imagined Wests. It's a co-production with the Autry Museum, and it's all about the 138-foot mural in the downstairs courtyard that portrays what this new documentary describes as, quote, a widely accepted mythology of the West that prioritizes white settler colonialism at the expense of other perspectives, including those of Native Americans, Black settlers, Asian Americans, and women, unquote. And while the discussion of what should and should not be represented is fascinating, I will save you from the hour-long gnashing of teeth that I went through and tell you at the outset that no, they haven't repainted or destroyed that beautiful mural.
I know that mural like the back of my hand, Henry.
I was thinking that, Bobby.
Yeah, and all my years there, it was always a point of conversation. And at one time, they actually did change the position and faces of, I think it's at least two, if not three figures that are right in the center, right where the banner ribbons are that have the names of all the galleries. For instance, the Chinese character initially was looking down, and they repositioned him to be more erect and more face forward and not, you know, having a stronger posturing. And I remember when there was conversation about all of that, that mural was done by a really well-known Disney, you know, back in the beginning days of the Autry. Disney Imagineering had a lot to do with a number of the initial exhibits such. And that mural was done by Guy Diehl. That may not be right. A very, very famous.
That is the name, Guy Diehl.
Yeah, yeah, very famous muralist. But it was always a point of conversation.
I was going to point out that Guy Diehl, among other things, painted hundreds of Western paperback book covers. And I find it interesting that in this whole hour-long discussion, nowhere in the discussion did anyone ever question the ethics of repainting an artist's work. And I was also surprised not mentioned, and they talk extensively about the history of the Autry. And never once is the late Joanne Hale mentioned, founding president, life trustee of the Autry, whose vision, I think, was so crucial to the building and the design of the museum.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I think I saw an image of her at one point, but her name is never said.
Oh, my goodness.
But,
you know,
but it's certainly a very interesting program to see. And and please check out the December True West, featuring my interview with Bruce Dern. And my newest INSP blog about Western perfectionist Tom Selleck. And you know what? You can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Henry.
Thank you, Jim.
And we'll be talking to you in December, my friend.
I look forward to it. Have a great show,
folks. As do we. Take care.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
Before we get started with our guest tonight, I do want to say that I got a phone call, an interesting phone call the other day, from a very, very good dear friend of mine, Mr. Rick Gilman called. to our guest, Rick Gilman is the one who provided the opening music for us. He wrote it and graciously gave it to us to use for the show. And he said he listens to the show now just so he can hear us giving him kind words. He's a little on the eccentric side, but you know you gotta love him because he's a hell of a guitar picker. You know what? We're right at our break time, so let's go ahead and do that. You're listening to LA Talk Radio, and of course, this is the Writer's Block, and we'll be back right after this brief word from LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. You know, it seems everyone has a podcast these days, so how about you do this? How about you start your very own radio show that goes out live worldwide for nary a pittance? If you think you have an idea that would translate to a radio talk format, then stop waiting. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Click on the link that says Become a Host. Follow the easy instructions, and before you know it, you'll be the on-air live host of your very own talk show on LA Talk Radio. We have 50-minute slots available every day, including Sundays, so don't be shy. Join the many that have started their careers on the air. Join the hosts on LA Talk Radio at www.latalkradio.com.
And we are back, and we're going to get right into it. We have a young lady with us tonight that is, I'm sure, eager to start talking. Well, maybe not, but we'll find out in just a minute. Bobby, I was listening to you talk about your poster, the mural on the wall, and talking about the Chinaman being erect. And I thought, what a bad choice of words for our guest tonight.
You had to go there, huh?
Well, not that you didn't think of it, Richard.
I'm not denying that statement, no.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
She's an author, she's a playwright, she's an actress, she's a survivor of Canada and New York and California, and she's with us tonight, and all her loveliness, please welcome to the Writer's Block, Jennifer Lieberman. Hello, Jen, how are you?
Hi, everyone, I'm fabulous. How are you?
I loved your book.
Thank you.
And not because of all the gratuitous sex, but because it's a fun read. It just covers 1 year. Of course, it is a takeoff on your one woman play, Year of the Slut.
That's right.
And the name of your book that we just finished reading is Year of the What?
Correct.
Yeah, and it's a fun read, and between she and her roommate, it's hard to tell which one is the best character. Although I'm going to vote for the roommate.
I agree.
We all want to be Kelly.
She had to have been fun to write. The whole book must have been fun to write.
It really was. I started off with it as a one-woman show, as you mentioned. It was Year of the Slut, and I had so much fun creating the characters. I played 10 different characters in the stage production of it. And I guess the most fun about writing it was just coming up with these things that kept surprising myself with my own imagination. And that to me was the most exciting part of the process. And of course, on stage, I was limited to what I could actually do on stage. But when I sat down to write the book, the sky was the limit. So I just kind of went beyond.
Well, yeah, I can imagine trying to reenact on stage the last scene in your book with I thought, oh my goodness. Now this is outrageous.
It definitely is. And
but Dana is such a great character. And for those of you who, if you want to read a fun read about a sexual awakening of a young lady, Year of the What is really, really for you. It's she's 21 years old, just moved to New York. Going through a dry spell. She broke up with her boyfriend, tried it one more time. That didn't work. So now she's on a roll. Now she's going to go for the year and do everyone that she can find.
That's one way of putting it, yeah. Well, she was actually, the Year of the Slut is more of, she was redefining what she believed the word to mean. Right. Because her roommate, as you mentioned, Kelly, the best character in the book.
Oh my gosh,
is she's so great. Unabashedly promiscuous and owns her sexuality in a way that Dana just did not. Dana was more sheltered and more naive and considered Kelly a slut. And then she found herself in the situation. She was heartbroken. She got out of her first relationship, a 4-year relationship, and thought that that was the one. She was the good girl who saved herself for the one. And when it didn't work out, she really had to reevaluate her idea of sex and what it meant to her and what it meant as a woman in her 20s. Because I think we're given a conversation about sex as we're teenagers. And then when women get into our 20s, nobody talks about sexual health, which is an actual thing. For example, like if a man in his mid-20s went to the doctor and said, I can't get aroused, that would be a medical problem. Nobody talks about how a healthy functioning woman has sexual desires and having a healthy sex life is part of normal life. People don't say that to women.
They do now.
Well, now, yes, the world has changed quite a bit. And this piece was written a few years ago. So now we're definitely getting there. But it's just kind of interesting. There's the double standard.
Well, I don't think there's so much a double standard anymore. Is that there's still a lot of misunderstanding in men.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was telling the bookie today, Jerry, I said, there's two things a guy understands, a board upside the side of his head and getting yelled at. That's pretty much what gets things into us. You know, if you try to reason with a man, you're just wasting your time. You might as well just go back home. I'm going to raise my hand and say I'm one. I not so much anymore, but boy, I tell you what, when we're younger, nothing gets through to us. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing gets through to us.
One thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But just to circle back, as much as you don't think that there's that double standard anymore, the word slut is still used as a weapon against women, no matter what. If anyone wants to attack a woman, they use that word, especially younger women. You know, as women get older, it turns into bitch. That's the word that's used as a weapon. But it is a go-to, it's a go-to word that people use to degrade women, regardless of what their actions are. Mm-hmm. So there is something that's still, you know, lingering in society that has to do with putting down promiscuous women.
Yeah, well, you know, words can still hurt. I mean, I call my brother a slut, so.
Well, but when you call a man one, it's a compliment.
You know, yeah, I know that's what he said. Yeah, thanks, that's the best compliment I've had all day, you know.
Totally.
Yes, yes. Well, Bobby, I are you going to want to ask this young lady a question or not? You're sitting there looking at me going,
Yeah, yeah. You have spoiled our totally innocent Bobby Jean Bell, by the way.
Oh, my God. You can see her. She's beet red.
I was red a lot during this, when I was reading this book. Jim would walk by me and he'd say, there must be something good right happening right now. And I'd be like, oh, my gosh.
The entire book?
I have to admit, I didn't finish reading until about 45 minutes ago, 6 o'clock tonight, Mountain Time. I was breathless, and so I didn't really have a lot of my normal time to go back and really think about, you know, great questions to ask you. One thing that I thought about while I was reading the book was about tonight's interview and wondering, gentlemen, how was it for you all to read the book? I think it, you know, for women, it's we can relate. It's eye-opening. I learned about a lot of things I didn't know about.
I
did wonder, you know, Jim, you went right off saying, you know, you loved it. But I wondered how it is for you guys to read a book like this.
Well, I read Candy and Lady Chatterley's Lover when I was in high school. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, so it's really, you know, at my age, you know, it's fun to watch the young people behave like rabbits. It really is. But, you know,
Richard, what about you?
I mean, I've said this before when we had a similar book last year or earlier this year. You know, I'm a guy, I'm a sci-fi guy, and I'm a Puritan at heart. So, you know, this is not a book I'm going to pick up and buy. But, you know, for me, if the story that's being told is engaging and entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't care what genre it's in. I don't care what, you know, what they're doing. But it's up to the author to give me a reason to keep reading. Mm-hmm. So So, you know, I mean, we had that one book, which I'm trying to remember the title. It was the one of the brothers that had a private detective agency, and the main character was an attorney being stalked. And okay, that, I mean, they had in that book, sex was going on in every room of that apartment. Okay. I survived that book. I'll survive this book. You know, but to me, it's the story. You know, it doesn't matter what's going on. As long as the story is great, as long as the characters are being developed. And I think that's what happened here.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what
the show is all about, is talking about the process of getting the book and writing the book.
Right. And Jennifer, as the book goes along, it felt, the different gentlemen that Dana meets, it felt very much like, not contrived at all, but that she was developing, it's like each one, when she met them, that was exactly who she needed to meet at that moment. That there was kind of an order to, I don't know if you want to say it, her education or her experiences as they build. And it's very different, you know, Russell's very different from Peter. And then we meet Bryce. We meet Bryce and then he makes another appearance. And it feels like it's a wonderful progression as she's growing. And then each one of these gentlemen, as they enter her life. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Yeah. Well, I think also in life, as we mature, we attract different things into our world. You know, so as she was evolving as a person and as she was gaining more confidence, because that's what this whole thing was about. Right. She was so insecure at the beginning of the book. And as she gained more confidence, she attracted men who were better suited to her as she moved up, you know, the ladder of confidence, so to speak. So she wasn't she wasn't going to waste time with the same type of guy as she would earlier on, because she wasn't that same person anymore.
Right, right.
And maybe that guy wouldn't be attracted to her either, because they wouldn't be interested in somebody mm-hmm. with that type of maturity mm-hmm. that she had gone through. So, mm-hmm.
And we see development with Kelly too. And I was happy to see that, because she's so cool from the very beginning, but she goes through a progression as well. And it was very interesting to see where you took her. Did you take her there, or did Kelly take herself there?
I took her there.
You took her there.
Yeah, but, so it was loosely based on my life. And like I said, once I started writing the play, it took on a life of its own, because I wanted to showcase my acting ability. So I was writing these characters based on like, oh, I can do this kind of accent. Let me choose a person from this part of the world or that part of the world, kind of based on what I could do physically with my own kind of instrument. And then sitting down to write the book was just a whole other level of creativity and imagination.
Right.
And I'm so in love with Kelly. I do agree. She's the most interesting. She's the most fun. And she did need to have an evolution. You know,
if she just
stayed where she was, I don't think her journey would have been as enjoyable for the audience.
But I have to say, I love the fact that she never gave up her day job totally. She still kept her foot in the dungeon. I love that.
You got to keep one foot in the dungeon, Jim, at all times.
That's a good quote. You got to keep one foot in the dungeon.
But it's a very well-written piece, and I have to say. Now, Richard was going to – in fact, I'm going to let him ask you this, because it was a very valuable question about transposing from a play to a novel.
Mm. Yeah, we've had authors on who have adapted their original book to a screenplay or a stage mm-hmm. play, and I've done it. But we don't often get a writer on who has gone the other way, where they've taken an existing stage play or screenplay and they've adapted it to a book. How, I guess this is a two-parter. How difficult is it to get it, into a novel form from that format? Because it's completely different setup. And then how did you approach doing that? Because it's a lot of work to get them, no matter which way you're going, to get them switched back and forth.
Yes. So it wasn't until, I never intended to write the novel. And it wasn't until I won the Audience Choice Award at a festival in New York that some people had suggested to me, this could be a really great book. This, like, from the title alone, people kept saying, like, if I saw this title in a bookstore, I would grab it. I don't even need to know what the book is about, because Year of the Slut was just such a compelling, collection of words.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one thing. I didn't really intend to do it. And then it went through several evolutions, because the book starts in the present. And the play started, the opening line of the play is, I was a horny 18-year-old virgin, alone for the first time in New York City. So the play started where she went to New York for the first time, lived with the two gay guys in the East Village who are HIV positive, but she was still a virgin. And then it evolved from there.
Right.
However, it is called Year of the Slut. So the book didn't really work having all the backstory at the front. Mm-hmm. So what happened is I had to start it. The who the fuck is Candace? Am I allowed to say?
What do you say? Go ahead.
No, anything
the
goes.
Opening line, I mean, if that doesn't grab you, nothing does.
That's the opening line of the book. That was in the play, but that wasn't until like midway through the play. That was kind of like, one of the climactical point that led her on the Year of the Slut.
Right.
And that was the second half of the play. The first half was this naive girl, falling in love for the first time. So the first incarnation of the book did not work, because there was just way too much backstory. So what I did was I had to start it like immediately in the present,
right,
what's going on now, and then weave in some of the backstory, because you also need the backstory to understand her journey.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
So that was the biggest, I think that was the biggest challenge. And also, it takes a while to come around sometimes when you have an idea of how you want it to be.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, and I do have to say, I had abandoned this novel several times over the years. I had the wrong editor. The first editor I hired just didn't get it. And I couldn't look at the manuscript for like a year and a half after those notes.
That's why you should have gone with Tuscany Bay. We would never have changed the thing. We had to break it right there. Jennifer, don't go away. Stay rare. Keep that thought, because it's a great idea, Tuscany Bay. Keep that in mind. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this brief word from Tuscany Bay Books.
It was a dark and stormy night when she walked into my office. She had a manuscript. Didn't know what to do with it. She'd finished, typed the end and all, but there was so much more she had to do. So I told her about my friends over at Tuscany Bay Books. They do all the editing, the formatting, they put a book cover on it, get the marketing done, they even have a publicist. Can't beat that in this town. So I sent her on her way to TuscanyBayBooks.com. Maybe that's where you should go too. As for me, I'm just going to sit here in my office and watch it rain.
Somebody
watched way too much 1940s film noir when he was growing up.
I was just going to say, it sounds amazingly like I was sitting in my office, sitting in my private office, looking at my private window, dropping private eye drops in my private eye when she walked by. Now, you ask me how I know she was tall. My office is on the second floor.
Yeah.
And I heard a knock on my door. I jumped out of my chair, jumped off the couch, opened the door. Nobody there. So I slammed the door, stripped over the couch, set it back at my chair. Door knocks again. It's those old things that in the 50s, they used to have those things.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. And I love the stripper music because I'm thinking pasties. Oh, for sure. Go. Anyway, we're back on the air we're back on the air with Jennifer Lieberman. If you want to call and talk to Jen, the number here, and I can understand why you would want to, if the number here is 323-203-0815, and again, that number, write it down, is 323-203-0815, and okay, your editor did not understand your manuscript.
The first editor I hired, yes, a friend recommended her. She works in academia. She works at a university. And she was very concerned about a few of the things that happened in the book. Not to give too much away, but there's a scene with a drug overdose. There's also a scene with the date rape. And she was very concerned that those weren't addressed in a way that she wanted, you know, because she works on campus and she talks to girls about date rape and things like that. And it really bothered me because those incidents were the way that they happened. There's nuggets of truth in them. Mm-hmm. And people overdose and they don't necessarily go to rehab. They don't necessarily go to the hospital. Like, you know, there are a million ways to handle a situation.
Sure.
So she was trying to get me to be kind of like parental and like, if this happens, this is what you have to do. And this is the way to deal with the situation. I'm like, that's not reality.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of date rapes that go unreported where a woman is confused, where a woman doesn't really know how to handle the situation. So I felt like she was kind of pushing her agenda on me, like number one, and number two, just structurally and the things that she was suggesting did not resonate at all. And she just didn't seem to like what I was writing.
Mm-hmm. I think it just comes down to. personally, and I don't know how Bobby Jean feels or Richard, but I thought you handled those scenes extremely well.
Thank you.
And I think they were
but
necessary.
But you have to also remember that this is a story, almost a true story, mm-hmm. and things like that do happen in real mm-hmm. life, and they're not pretty.
Yeah, and I thought they were necessary and handled really well.
Right, they were handled very well, and I applaud you. Now, if you don't mind, let's talk about editors for a minute, because editing a book is very, very, very important, and it's going to give you either a good story or one that's chopped to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Richard and I, when we started Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, Rich?
I think we're at five. Yeah.
Yeah, we're at five. We decided then and there that we were never going to mess with somebody's manuscript.
Mm.
Story is a story. Now, we'll put necessary words, because a lot of writers tend to put too many words in sentences when they really not needed.
Mm-hmm.
Overexcite the reader. I don't know if that's the right term to use, but they tend to overdescribe. Mm-hmm. Or use words that don't exist. I mean, like a smoking. A smoking is not a word. But, we'll do that. We'll take out unnecessary phrases or words and make a coherent sentence into a coherent sentence, not messing with the writer's intent or story.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of editors do that.
Yeah, it's been a journey. I've worked with three editors on this book. You know, and that was also a lesson, because when I had first written the manuscript, I was like sending out query letters and like sending it to agents and stuff without working with an editor. And mm-hmm. now the thought of it is just like completely absurd. Like, you don't write a manuscript and just send it off to people. But it was so naive, and I mm-hmm. hadn't ever attempted to do anything in the literary world. I just didn't really understand. Mm-hmm. And then I went to a conference called Author 101 University, and I got a little bit of an education.
As we all do.
Yeah, and I learned that everything takes a village. Everything.
Yeah, well, okay. Go ahead, Rich.
I was just going to say, I think the important thing for any author is to find an editor, because I went through three before I landed the editor that I stay with. For my own personal books, it goes to her first.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes back, because I can work with her. She gets where I'm going. She finds stuff. She'll bring stuff that I didn't think of. And I had an editor. It was a head editor from hell, kept trying to change things, kept telling me what I wrote couldn't possibly happen, even though I have, stacks of documents to say this is exactly how it happened. So to find an editor you can work with, I think, is next to actually writing the book, is the important part of this whole process.
I think the most important part.
Yeah.
And we have been extremely fortunate, and I would have loved to have worked on your book. I really would have, because I don't think I would have changed a thing. Well, maybe cleaned up some grammar and stuff, but other than that, that's what we do. But I find it. Richard and I have been blessed in that we've gotten manuscripts in, with the except one exception, that have been almost effortless.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you're dealing with writers that are, world known, and, they're giving you manuscripts that you don't have to do a lot of work on them.
Yes, exactly.
Formatting's the hard, when you're dealing with a manuscript that's 487 pages and, no spaces between the lines. So, we love writers, and we deal with writers every day. And when you see a writer, especially someone with your abilities, I mean, you go from the entire gamut. You're the actress to playwright to on stage to movies to theater to TV to author.
Yeah, and it's so funny, because you start out on a path and you have an idea of where you want to end up, but different things present themselves, and there's different opportunities that come your way. And I've just always kind of said yes. Anytime there's been an opportunity mm-hmm. or somebody suggested something, like, for example, the one woman show, a woman suggested that I write it as a showcase piece about a year and a half after I got to LA, still looking for an agent, still looking for a manager, all of that stuff. Tried to invite industry. I wrote it for the purpose of just doing a showcase. I just thought I would do it for a few nights as a showcase and hopefully land an agent or maybe a producer or director would see me and take some interest. And like in the movie La La Land with Emma Stone, nobody really came. I had more than one person in the audience. I had friends from acting class and my mom flew in from Canada and things like that. But the reason that I did it, the expectations that I had, never kind of came to fruition. However, I realized that maybe I had something there. I pushed myself as a creative because I wrote it and I played all the characters. And I was like, I've got something here. I don't know what it is yet, but I have something. So I'm going to keep going with it. Mm-hmm. And I got into a festival in New York and it did really well at the festival. And then someone suggested the book and I was like, okay.
Yeah, why not? Can't dance. Exactly. It's too ready to plow.
Exactly. Why not? Yeah. And even I've been doing stand-up comedy for several years. That was another thing that somebody suggested. Like, you're really funny. You write funny stuff. Why don't you try stand-up? And I never thought I would. I thought it was terrifying before I had ever done it. But now it's so much fun. I find so much joy doing things like that. So I think as a creative, like the more we stretch ourselves, the more opportunities we find.
Right. We have to take one final break, so don't go away. We'll be right back with you, at which time either Richard or Bobby Jean is going to ask you the question. So be thinking about that. Okay. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity. Okay. You've written a book. Now, how are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They are going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, radio, podcasts, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. Why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity today at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your word, it's your work, and it's your brand. Why trust it to anyone else?
And we are back with our guest, Jennifer Lieberman, and one of you two fine individuals. Go
I'll
ahead.
Take it.
Pop the question.
I will put Jennifer to the question. I had to read a non-guy book, then I want some revenge here. Jennifer, I know that this is your first book, correct?
Yeah.
No, okay. Second.
First or second?
You have the other.
She wrote poetry. She has.
It's my first novel. I do have novel. A poetry
okay.
book.
Right.
Okay. So in your journey as a writer, have you ever encountered that mean Grinch that we call the writer's block? And if you have, how have you run him off so that you can continue producing the words you produce?
I love this question because I don't deal with writer's block. If I don't feel like writing, if I don't feel inspired, I don't sit down to write. And I know that can sound very like laissez-faire about it. It's not that I don't take my work seriously. It's that I know that one day of inspired writing will produce a better product than 1 week of hemming and hawing in a place when I'm not in the headspace for it. So my way of dealing with not being inspired is finding things that inspire me. So I don't feel like I need to be sitting at a computer typing in order to be writing. So sometimes it's, you know, going out to a nightclub and dancing, and that's what I need to, you know, to get the juices flowing again. Or maybe it's going to the beach and doing some yoga by the water or going on a hike. So my whole thing is staying in process through inspiration. And that's so that's how I don't deal with writer's block, because I just refuse. I don't sit down when it's not there.
Yeah. Yeah, and usually when you force something like that, that's when you're getting bad results anyway. And I'm sorry, Bobby, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, then it turns into a cycle of negativity, because then it's not coming out the way you want, and then you get frustrated with yourself, and you just go down this negative spiral instead of just going outside, going to lunch with a friend, having a glass of champagne in the middle of the day.
Good girl. Love your style.
You know, doing some shopping on Melrose when you're tipsy. And and something will eventually come out.
Have a rum and coke while you're on a radio show.
I interrupted you, Bobby.
I just thought you're so versed in all of the creative things that you do, that we talk so often just with authors, so it's writer's block. But I assume, based on what you just shared, that you would anytime you're feeling a creative block, you would handle it the same kind of way. So you're rehearsing, you're looking at a play, or whatever. That we artists can have blocks too. We would just call it a creative block.
Right.
So your answer would be the same, I would imagine.
Right. Yes. And there's a fabulous book called The Artist's Way. And it talks about taking yourself on an artist date every week. And the artist date, it's not about, going to the museum and studying some Rodin. It's about nurturing your inner child. So if your inner child wants to go to the Santa Monica Pier and go to the roller coaster, that's your artist date that week. You know, if you want to dress up in a tutu and go roller skating, in your neighborhood, that's your artist date. And I read that book several years ago, and it's something that always stuck with me about nurturing that inner child, because there's so much pressure we put on ourselves, and we effort so much sometimes because we want to achieve and we want to hit that deadline. And that doesn't really serve our creative flow.
Right, right. We're out of time, Jen. I really, you know what? We want, and I'm going to speak for all of us, because I think we all want you back on the show.
I would love that.
Oh, yeah.
So get a hold of the bookie. We'll rebook you for 2022.
Sounds great.
And I would just love to have you back. And I'll talk to Mickey as well. And we'll get you back on the show. I think he may already have you booked back on for next year, but we'll check. Can you let everyone know where they can find you? I know you have a website, and I know you have a Facebook page.
Yes. So the website for the book is yearofthewhat.com, and you can find all the links to get the hard copy of the book, the Audible, the Kindle, everything through that website. Mm-hmm. My acting website is jenniferliebermanactor.com if you want to keep up with what performances I'm doing. And all my social media handles are I am Jen Lieberman. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everything is at I am Jen Lieberman.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's late there, but it was an honor having you. I just loved having you on the show. I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but we will next time. I promise.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Bobby welcome. Jean.
And for, of course, this is going on. This will be a video. So we'll make sure that you get the link.
Thank you.
Okay. Next week's show, we have a return guest, Mr. David Kettlehake. Great guest. He was on before earlier this year. Great guest, good writer, and a lot of fun to talk to. So make sure you tune in right then for the Writer's Block right here on LA Talk Radio. And for myself, Richard Polinelli, Bobby Jean Bell, of course, Jennifer Lieberman. Our producer and owner and what do you call him, engineer, Mr. Sam Hassan, and of course, without whom this show would not be possible, the bookie herself, Sherry Christina. We are out of here. Don't go away.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.